Welcome to Uncharted Living. We're your hosts, Christine, Rebecca, and Ty. We are life coaches who are committed to the road less traveled. Join us each week for thought-provoking and entertaining conversations, all designed to help you create your own map. Uncharted Living. It's just the beginning. Don't be afraid to get life started. Jump off the map. Hello, fellow humans, and welcome back to Uncharted Living. Today, we have a very special guest and someone very dear to my heart. Poorna Jagannathan is an actress and producer. She is known for a myriad of roles on TV, plays, and movies. I can't tell you any of them because the actor strike that is still happening at the time of this recording, but you can always Google her. I can tell you that the play she produced and acted in won an Amnesty International Award in 2013. Poorna was born in Tunisia and grew up in Ireland, Argentina, Pakistan, and Brazil. She was named by Gold House as one of the most impactful Asians in America in 2021 and 2022. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy life, Poorna, and being here with us today.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here with you.
Thank you for being here.
Of course, my pleasure.
So Becca and I and Christine, our other co-host who's not here today, are all life coaches, and we are interested in exploring the path not taken, the life that maybe isn't the one on the car commercial with the beautiful picket house and the two SUVs in the driveway. Maybe something different, maybe something bigger, maybe something smaller, and we really want to have you here to talk about the ways that you have been uncharted in your life, because we're trying to walk in solidarity with all of our listeners who find themselves in one way or the other a little bit on the fringe, a little bit outside maybe the prepackaged life prescription. And we think you fit that perfectly. And my first question for you is, being a working actor is, to me, a very uncharted career path. And did you fall into acting on purpose or on accident? How did that happen for you?
Well, it was very purposeful. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be an actor. I was little. I remember my palm being read at seven, and someone told my mom, like, she gasped, but she's like, she's going to be an actor. And it just sounded so strange and so weird. You know, we didn't know any actors. We didn't even know anyone who had set foot on a set. I literally didn't meet an actor or anyone who had set foot on a set until I went to acting school at 30. I was just in places that I wasn't surrounded by anyone. Forget actor. I just wasn't really surrounded by anyone in entertainment my entire life. But I really felt like, I would be very, very immersed in any form of storytelling. And I just felt like when I was younger, books really saved me. And it was just this opening into worlds that I would completely get lost in and never wanted to leave. And then later in my 20s, when I moved to New York, at that time, I don't think they were unionized, but I would usher a lot and I would get to see plays. We were so broke, but I get to see plays, and I tried to do that once a week. And there was something about, there is something about storytelling that I feel is such an unbelievable, not only, I use the word escape, but it's such a massive source of joy to me to watch, and I always felt I want to be part of it. So it was very intentional, very slow, going towards a goal that I had no idea how to get towards. But, you know, in my 20s, I moved to New York, and I started taking acting classes. In college, I did do some acting classes as well. But it was interesting. I think what happened in college is, anyway, we'll talk about that later. I just feel like, you know, women who look like me, Asian women, there was no place for us. And so when there's no place for you, people, be it in the elementary level of just college or high school, but be in the bigger level of agents and managers, they just don't see you as viable and therefore not to be taken seriously. So I faced a lot of that in my in the initial part of my career, where I just, no matter how good I was or no matter how I showed up, I just was never given a chance. But just this, it didn't even matter because I loved it so much, you know? So if I wasn't given a chance out there in the real world, I always had my acting classes where I could retreat into. So I'm not sure I ever thought I could become a professional actor, and this journey has been very slow. But I knew I wanted to act in whatever capacity, be it in a class on the weekends, like the adult acting classes I take through my 20s. This version of my career, I could never imagine for sure.
And Porno, what has the industry changed much since when you speak of being an Asian woman? Has it gotten easier, harder? What's changed within the industry?
The biggest change is the ecosystem's changed. So the people in charge of the bigger networks, of looking at stories they want to tell, of greenlighting, there's a lot of, they're either called to diversity or they themselves come from a diverse background and want to bring those stories and have the courage to bring those stories and have the need to see their own stories portrayed out there in some form. So, you know, you have a lot of executives now who are people of color, who are Asian, who are South Asian, greenlighting projects. You have a lot of creators of color pushing projects to feed the pipeline. So there's Mindy Kaling and Shonda Rhimes happening. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of actors of color and South Asian actors who have been honing their craft for years and were all ready and here. And it's just when I began in the early 2000s, we were all just starting. Like, we were all just trying. All my friends from that time are so talented, but, you know, the demand and supply were completely off. There was no demand and very little supply. And so that has really grown over the years. But it's really like my career trajectory is absolutely my career trajectory is drawn on what is happening to the visibility of South Asian women. Like, that's a graph that you can chart my career on. More South Asian women have gotten visible, have gotten a say, have become creators, have become writers, my jobs have increased. The amount of times that I'm considered has increased. And I don't think it's a moment where, say, South Asian women or Asian women are having their moment. I think it has much deeper roots now.
Did I hear you correctly when you said you went to acting school at age 30?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So what was that shift for you like? You spent your 20s taking classes and ushering and doing other things. What was the catalyst for you to finally be like, okay, let's do this?
Well, there were a couple of things. One is I spent my 20s, you know, I'm a advertising executive. I had my own company till 2016. Like, that's just what I did. I went to school for it. I majored in it. I got a job right out of college doing it. And luckily it was in New York and I could take my weekend adult acting classes. But, you know, I read somewhere very recently that something happens between 28 and 30. Where like cosmically, like if you're not on the, it's if you're not on the path you're supposed to be, the the things will shift you towards being on the path you're supposed to be. It's a very, I forgot what it's called. It's called something, but it's a 2-year window where things will push you towards where you're supposed to be. And for me, 30 just felt like, I mean, it's so naive now. I'm 50. And for me, 30 was like, it's now or never. It felt like a pivotal age. You can do this. You can change your career whenever you want. You can become who you're meant to be whenever you want. But at that time, 30 just felt very, very pivotal. And, you know, I have only a few years left kind of feeling. but at 30, I was working full time in advertising. And I'd applied to acting school and I got in. And so at 30, at the beginning of 30, I got married and then I went to acting school.
Oh, wow. What acting school did you go to?
It is called the Actors Studio. It's a 3-year program. I only went for a year. I just, you know, 9/11 happened. All my money saved up for acting school just went in a heartbeat. And I just did a year. But that year was so pivotal for me because I didn't have the courage to break free and just say, I'm an actor. I didn't even know what that meant, you know? So being in school for that year let me go of being so attached to, you know, a career in advertising. Like, I remember when I started acting school, I was in a posh 2-bedroom apartment in Chelsea and living my best life. And that was when I was in advertising. And the end of acting school, I had sectioned off a tiny bit of my living room. I'd rented both the rooms. I was living in a little cot and I was the happiest I've ever been, you know? Just like, wow. I was so, so, so deeply broken, so happy. But I was scared of that. I was scared.
Just made it work. Yeah. Right.
I was scared.
Well, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say, I think probably for a lot of our listeners, because of the work that we do, is really help guiding folks through those kinds of transitions. And when you're in that moment, when you're in, you know, your apartment and you're sectioning it off, and you really don't have the long-term results yet, right? And so it can feel really scary. There are these moments where, you know, I think we've all had them to some way, shape, or form where it's like, how do we, or what advice, I guess, is my real question at the heart of it. What advice would you give to someone who's in that stage right now, who's listening and is like, you know, there's so many emotions that come along with it?
I have a lot of, I feel like I always make the distinction. I use the word joy, but I do stay away from it most times because it is joyous, but it's joyous in retrospect. It's actually really hard when you're in it. So I use the word life force more often. And even when I'm a professional actor now, I use life force versus joy because I can be on sets that are so terrible and so toxic and I just can't wait to, you know, go home. But a life force is really like, what can you tap into? And the biggest indicator of it is when time flies. Like there is no, you don't care if it's the weekend and you're working, you don't care if it's Monday at 4 a.m. that's your call time. Like time doesn't play the part that it usually plays anymore. You know, I was in advertising and man, I had a good run in advertising. I was always at the best company. We were always doing well, the best bosses, best clients. I'm still friends with so many of them. It's still my core community. But I felt such relief on Friday and such anxiety Sunday night that I was like, I don't want to live like this. It's such a weird feeling. Like, what am I doing? And so I do talk about like, figure out what your life force is. And you can tap into it and do it in, I always say success has so many different forms and you cannot be tied to a version of success. So being a working actor or being on a show for more than one, like that's no measure. At many, many times when I had to quit acting completely and go back into advertising, I was still successful because on the weekends or in the evenings, I could still be in an acting class. It was still me tapping into my life force. So you just have to keep that channel always open in whatever form for yourself. And that's successful because not many people can do that, will do that, or they'll see it as just, you know, giving up. I'm not sure, but always keep that channel where your life force is available to you open and see what form it takes.
Poorna, I want to ask you about the working actor part of what you just said, because I don't think a lot of people, our listeners included, understand the life. I want you to kind of peel back the curtain just a little and tell us what a working actor is and what a life of a working actor is like.
I mean, it's joyous. It really is. I cannot tell you how unbelievable it is and what joy there is to it. Working actor, it's when you're working, it's so hectic. It's 16-hour days. It's crazy. It's hectic. And when you're not working, you're suddenly doing 6 loads of laundry and you have no idea what's going on and how you're feeling.
Like, what day is it?
There's so much laundry. What a working actor is, there's still, you know, I'm still at that point where sometimes I get roles offered and sometimes I have to audition. It just depends on, I think people are now seeing me as more comedic than before, but I had to audition for anything that was comedic a little before. Mm-hmm. When a project is really like big and high, kind of high stakes, I usually do still have to audition. What it's like to be a working actor. I can't gush enough about it. It's really glorious, but it's always been glorious. I think when I look back, I'd get really, I'm very good with rejection for sure. But there are these parts which I would audition for and like I just knew I was right for and wouldn't get for whatever reason. Mm. Just, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what was going on sometimes. So I get so close. But now, you know, when I look back, I mean, some was just the time, right? Like where you fit in the timeline, which you have no control over. Mm-hmm. But some of it is it's very nuanced. It's really like what the casting director and the director and the producers are looking for is that your essence matches exactly with the essence of that character. And I just got that lesson very recently. And so when you are lucky enough to be in a project, when you don't get a project, it's much easier for me to let it go because I know the right person out there got it and I'm so happy for them. And when I do get a project, I'm even more delighted. I'm even more confident that this is a role for me. And I was never like that just a couple of years ago. But what is the life of a working actor? It's a lot of wonderful downtime. You know, I'm one of the laziest people you'll ever meet in your entire life. So it just lets me really kind of indulge that part of myself. And it's. I would say if a person has trouble dealing with instability and things, you know, you really have to work on that. I have no trouble dealing with instability.
And it sounds like that wasn't something that you had, that wasn't as big of a hurdle for you as it might have been for someone else, even in the beginning. Yeah. Do I have that right?
When I talk about stuff that's happening in my career to my sister, her heartbeat will go up.
Very
hard for her to hear about anything that's happening in my life because it causes so much anxiety, and for me it just causes, like, it just gives me so much joy and so much adventure, and like the same thing is fun for me and not fun for her. So it is a very particular personality type.
What do you feel like it's important for people to know about the state of the strike right now, the writer's strike, the actor's strike? How has that impacted you? I know you can't say specifics, things like that, but are you able to share a little bit with our listeners on, you know, where, I mean, because you really highlighted the uncertainty of the industry right now. Yeah. And this is a great example of that right now, where it's kind of open-ended, and where right. do things lie?
Writers just had a massive breakthrough, right? They just settled on a deal, and I believe the deal's approved, and they're, you know, and we're going right after, because a lot of the things that the writers yeah. wanted, we also wanted. So everyone just, a lot of people thought that it would go on for much longer, because the perception was that we were so far away from each other. What especially the streaming services were asking for or didn't want to give is what we want. Like, it just felt, the narrative was that we were so far away, and clearly we're not as far away. You know, the strike is, it's complex, because streaming services were set up at an era where we didn't think they would dominate our lives. The way they do and dominate our viewership. So the structure, I mean, the structure of payment, the structure of viewership, the structure of, you know, all that stuff, just, it wasn't set up for what is happening today, where I don't even have a TV anymore. I have no idea what's happening on cable anymore, which wasn't our lives, right? But the way I look at it, it just feels like such fundamental profit sharing. That's just it. We're not asking for more money. We're just asking for profit sharing, the way a lot of companies and a lot of, you know, streamers and a lot of things operate. If you're on a show and you are, you know, if you're doing well, you should be able to see a bit of that. You know, I was making a, you know, I have been a working actor for many, many years, but I barely make health insurance, right? I barely have scathed through health insurance, and I have been a series regular now 4 times.
Mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, it's just like, you just, there, it's just the nature, like, it's the nature of me being South Asian, it's the nature of me being a woman, it's the nature of me being a 50-year-old, it's the nature of a working actor. Doesn't guarantee that you make health insurance, it doesn't guarantee you can make a living, it doesn't guarantee much at all. And with streaming services, where, you know, I did a show, and I should be able to say, I did a show this year and I should make health insurance from it for the next year, right? Like, the benefit of it should carry over, but it doesn't. And so it just impacts us day to day. Like, actors make, actually, between taxes, manager, agent, and lawyer, you're like 50% is just, you can just write it off right away. So what you're left with, what you're left with is a lot of joy, but also you just, sometimes a lot of people can't make a living.
Yeah. Yeah. Porna, what is the biggest misconception about being a working actor? I mean, I feel so many of our listeners or our people out there think, oh, anybody on TV, rich and famous, done, done for life. What besides the cut to the, to the managers and the lawyers, what else are we missing about the joys of being rich and famous, or the lie of being rich and famous as an actor?
There's no lie to being rich and famous. I don't think there's a lie. I'm joking.
It's just perfect. Everything's just red carpet.
I do think my life is perfect. I do have to say, there's a lot of things which are very hard and which are very, you know, but my life is perfect. I in a way that I have dipped into my life force, and therefore it's perfect. Mm-hmm. And I can be on sets that I hate. I hate them. I hate myself. I hate everything's going, like, you know, all the bad things that happen in any workplace will happen on a set as well. It's not a, you know, utopian or Shangri-La, you know, place. But it's okay. This is the ride that I wanted, and the ride has ups and downs, but I'm still on the right ride, and that feels really fantastic. I think the I think the thing that I do that I know will pay off, I heard a quote, Ben Kingsley once said, you practice, you practice, you practice, and then you get lucky. And I think what the misconception is that you forget that acting is a craft. Like, I work on my craft every day. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not working on material. I have a best friend who's also an actor, and we dedicate, you know, an hour and a half just to our craft. So when I'm working on a show, there is, like, I'm taking, you know, I'm always in acting class. I have acting class every Tuesday. Like, I'm always in class. You can never, stop working on your craft. Otherwise, you'll just become obsolete so fast. So I think that's a misperception, that somehow you can say you're an actor and, you know, you get a gig and it's you'll just kind of coast on that. I think it's like many, many professions. It's like you have to keep understanding, keep going deeper into script analysis, keep building characters, keep looking at work. You just, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of rejection. It's a lot of hard work. And sometimes it pays off and sometimes it doesn't. But I'm telling you, it's always amazing.
Well, you've mentioned Life Force a few times. And the thing that comes up for me is, I mean, I feel that way now, finally, in the path that I'm on. And even still with that, there are some practices that play into that for me that keep me connected to that. Is that the same for you? Are there other practices that you incorporate in your life that keep you connected to that life force?
What do you mean?
I mean, self-care, right? I mean, for me, meditation is a piece of that puzzle. Having dedicated alone time is a piece of that for me. Looking at things my body is processing is a piece of that for me. Even knowing how to regulate my nervous system, being able to process emotions as they come. Are there other practices? I guess I'm just curious. And maybe not. Maybe it's enough just to be tapped into something you love so much that provides an avenue for all of that. I imagine acting to tap into all of those things in some way, shape, or form anyways. But are there other things that keep you connected to that life force?
I mean, I still go back, you know, as a child, you could never see me without a book. Like, it just, it was impossible. It was like, it was a growth from my hand. I still am very, very deeply connected into storytelling. Very deeply connected. And a lot of times I'll read, you know, I'll read scripts before they're on TV or on a streaming service. Like, I'll get them, and there may or may not have been a part for me, but I'll read them, and I'm so curious on what the creative interpretations are for those people, and how what I read came to life, especially on things that I didn't get. I love watching things I didn't get and how it came together and who got it. And
right.
Just like,
really?
Yeah. Being so, in awe of how they took the story off of the page and what they did with it. I'm always, always, always so happy for whoever gets the project, because I know it went to the right person at the right time. I think I'm very, very deeply immersed in the art of storytelling and very deeply invested in other people's storytelling as well.
Yeah.
But in terms of meditation, really beautiful. I wish I meditated.
That's okay. You don't have to.
Porta, as a storyteller, besides acting, do you dabble in the other things, writing, producing, directing? Do you prefer acting? What are your relationships with the other pieces?
Yeah, it's a real, real, real shame that when I was in high school, I got very scared of writing. I used to write, you know, and I kept a journal for about 30 years. And I just, in high school, something happened. I went to high school in India, and my academic level was so much different from what was happening in the Indian high school system. Indian high school system is so high. It's so high that I couldn't keep up. But especially for the humanities, we had something called guidebooks, which are, this is the text, this is the question that's going to be asked, and this is the answer. So you had to memorize all that. There were just answers that were expected out of you. And so I took that a little too seriously. A lot of amazing writers come out of India, so they can always find their own voice. But something happened to me where I lost my voice and I became very scared of writing my own thoughts. It was not the standard, and it was not what people wanted to hear, and it's definitely not what the test needed. So for 4 years, I really stopped writing and stopped exploring my voice, and I think that 4 years was so pivotal to me, and I could never find it again. So I am so saddened that I don't write, and I'm actually very scared of writing. I've produced a couple of plays. I feel like it took like 10 years to recover from the work that went into that. You know, we did a play called Nearby, and we toured it for 3 years around the world, and I produced it. I just couldn't even go back to the theater after that for many, many years. I was so, so deeply exhausted. It's a thankless job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it is creating something into being. You know, I fundraised for it and put the team together. I had this amazing director writer come down from South Africa. She was in Montreal at that time to make the play. But you're making something out of nothing. Mm. And the effort it takes to will something into creation is quite something. So I have done that. I do feel like my next step in the business is, but I just feel like I got started, right? I think I got my first gig at 34. I was in acting class and this guy sat next to me and I looked at him and I recognized him. He was on a show that I was on 17 years ago. He was a series regular and I was just a guest star. But I remember him because I was on set and I gave birth that night because I was on my feet all day. And I that was like one of the few roles I got, but that was 17 years ago and he's sitting right next to me. So it's funny. Wait, what was your question?
I think you answered it. It was about other pursuits you have in terms of directing, producing.
I feel like it's the next step. It has my name on it. I feel like I just got started. Like I've just been working for 4 years continuously and 2 years was the pandemic. So I just am getting started. So I'd love to explore this acting thing a little longer before I jump into producing and directing.
Yeah. You touched on something just a little bit ago that you said you went to high school in India. Yeah. And what I read about you is that you have lived in a few different locations. I also read that one of your parents was a Indian diplomat. Do I have that right? Mm-hmm. So you moved quite a bit throughout your growing up years. I'm curious, like, how does that experience play into acting for you? What do you take with you from that experience?
Well, for me, what was really fascinating is when I moved to countries, especially like I just remember this being in Brazil or in Argentina, where your acting is not your words. Like when a person is speaking Portuguese and Spanish or just different parts in India, there it's not the words that are different, but the body language shifts totally. Mm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was young, when I moved to Argentina, so that is crystal clear for me. And, you know, I was a little older in Brazil. I was in my late teens in India, but the body moves differently when you speak different languages. The body moves, therefore, differently when you do different characters. So always finding a way to look for that in my acting, for sure. And then, you know, when you're a kid, all you want to do is not stand out. You just want to assimilate as fast as possible. You know, you only Yeah. As like an adult, do you understand that you don't have to fit in anymore? But as a kid, you're so desperate to fit in. So,
yeah.
So just like quickly fitting in cultures which are not your own by any stretch of the imagination. And so, you know, really that muscle was very, very strong for me.
Poorna, you mentioned that you've been pregnant, so we know that you have a child. Yeah. I would love to talk to you about the way that you have intentionally or unintentionally parented differently than your parents did or your neighbors did. Talk to me about being a parent.
I definitely wanted to give Anav the stability I didn't have growing up, location-wise. I definitely had a fantasy of us being in one place and him having community. That did not happen. You know, Azad comes from a family that moves around as well. I move around so much. We both have this travel itch. So fortunately or unfortunately, Anav moved around a lot until we came back to LA when he was maybe 10. But for the first 10 years, it was a lot of like bumping around, like we both had, Azad and I. And so, you know, it is what it is. But when we moved back to LA in 2015, I definitely consciously the next month got a dog so that the dog could at least root us and we would just not move around we just moved all the time. And there's also like, you know, because I took this unconventional path that I was always rejected from, you know, there was like, I cannot tell you how many acting schools I auditioned for and I got passed up by everyone, literally, except the Actors Studio. I just understand that fundamentally what a rejection is for me, it's a rejection is someone who can't see you yet. That's all. Let's see who you are yet. That's all a rejection is for me. So, you know, that's how I try and explain stuff to Anav, which is like, you know, if he didn't make the team in soccer, he didn't do this. It's just, you just have to keep at it. Like I always say, you know, soccer might give up on you. He loves soccer. You know, soccer might give up on you all the time, but you can't give up on soccer. And that's like the philosophy that I have made for myself. You know, acting has not opened its doors for me for a very long time, but I just have always loved it, right? So it could be an unrequited love, but you still love it. You still keep in it. It doesn't mean anything. Mm. And then also just, you know, just taking taking your foot off the pedal when it comes to stuff academically. Especially this college, like I'm really encouraging him to take a year off between high school and college so he doesn't have this feeling of being told what to do for such a huge amount of years all the time. Like, go figure it out and find yourself, find a place, find a sense of belonging or start finding a sense of belonging and then, you know, go back to school. And I hope he will, and I think he will. Or just like, you know, just I hope I have a massive sense of adventure, you know, going places and doing things and doing unconventional doesn't scare me. So I hope he sees a bit of what his dad and I, the risks we take and how, you know, how it doesn't matter if it pays off or doesn't pay off. The fun is just taking the risk. So stuff like that. I mean, I know even though I say we don't academically push him, there's clearly some transmission that happens, right? he does feel the pressure from us, and I'm not sure where it comes from, but clearly we're doing something. But yeah, I think those are some of the lesson. But you know, especially there was a show I was on recently, and what I really understood from that show is that all kids want is a sense of belonging from their family. So that's kind of what I really try and focus on that versus anything else.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. Well, wonderful. I mean, I know we're kind of coming up on time here. Porna, is there anything else that you want to share? You feel like, I know you get interviewed all the time, but is there anything that you feel like no one's asking you or anything that you can plug and do want to plug?
Oh, can't plug anything. I think, you know, I was thinking about this. I'm reading a book. It's called They Called Us Exceptional by Prachi Gupta. It's called They Called Us Exceptional and Other Lies That Raised Us by Prachi Gupta. And it's really bringing up a lot of thoughts and emotions, which is, I think my next step is not so much producing or directing, but it's really trying to focus on honor stories that tell the Asian experience, the story of the Asian experience, but the stuff that we never talk about. So be it domestic violence and, you know, basically life so we're called the model minority, right? Mm-hmm. And within the model minority, it's like, you know, we show up and we're good and we can assimilate into a majority Caucasian norm and stuff like that, right? And where we keep the peace and we don't make too much noise and we're, you know, a lot of the immigrants that came here, especially South Asians, it was so hard to immigrate unless you were brilliant and you were asked for that. The category of South Asians that our parents are, you know, they're exceptional. They were exceptional in their home country and therefore were allowed to immigrate too. So I'm so curious on, and all the roles I have played have always been within this model minority thing. I've played tons of lawyers and doctors and just people who can solve things and keep things together. But I'm so excited for the next part of my career is to show the underbelly of that, to show what happens when you go home and work and what happens in the household, you know. In my own family, there has been suicide, depression, alcoholism, sexual assault, and we're all within the category of model minority, right? All of us are held within what actually is happening within the household is what happens in every household, no matter what color you are and what race and what background you come in. So I think that's the next phase of where I'm at, where my head's at, telling those stories within, you know, the model minority is a golden cage that you're put in. It's still a cage though. So really happens inside of it is what I'm so excited and interested in exploring. And so the next project that I'm working on is I'm playing like a person who, you know, is part of something, a model minority. We've done, you know, the family's done really well and they're successful in doing what they do, but the underbelly is they're running a drug business actually. So just like, just what is the flip side of the narrative that we've heard for so long and that we've bought in for so long?
That's amazing, Porna, because after fighting for our right to be here as minorities, what comes next after the doctor lawyer role, right? Now you've proven there's space for you as a South Asian American woman. But what's next? Where's your humanity?
Right. Where's the 360 of us, right?
Amazing.
Where's the story of the person who didn't make it? I'd really encourage you guys to read this book. It's just outstanding. But yeah, what is the, you know, the sibling that falls through the crack and why they fell through the crack? It's so, I love like families with a lot of siblings because each sibling tells a story, but there's always one sibling that holds a psychosis of the family closer than the other. And so what happens to them? And, you know, I think what this book is really highlighting is when we talk about the model minority, especially among Asians, we don't talk about mental health at all, because it's taboo, and our, you know, to be exceptional and immigrate at that time, you really just had to have a really strong mental makeup as well. And so what happens when you start peeling that off, and what does immigrant trauma look like, and how is it passed down? How does it manifest? How does, so many of us were raised in neighborhoods, you know, in Argentina, like I can look at the class picture from a mile, and you can spot me because I'm the only person of color in it. So what is it? What is being the only one, a person of color, look like? And what is the trauma that comes from that? And what are the stories that come out of that? I'm just so curious to start digging the other side of storytelling, of our storytelling.
Oh, Purna, what a gift you are.
You are, and you know it. You are. You've impacted an absolute so much. Aww.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for being here today. Becca and I were so excited to see you. We didn't know what was going to happen. And of course, you've blown our minds open even more than we would have expected.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
We look forward to having you back in a couple of years when, you know, we can talk.
I can talk about shows and stuff. I can't wait.
I know. We'll be able to hear all these stories that you're building and really bringing to the forefront now.
I hope so.
Yeah. So what I heard is that you just agreed to come back in a year or two, and we'll catch up then.
I hope it's a great success.
Thank you so much, Purna.
Thank you so much, Purna.
Bye.
Thank you so much for spending another week with us. Follow us at Uncharted Living Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And please like and share this episode with your favorite fellow human. Uncharted.